We'll learn a little bit more for maybe another week or two. Then we'll start to learn about the life of the Kedushas Levi and some and Torahs in the Kedushas Levi. The Yitzyasu B'Sachtis Ahar. This is probably the most famous, one of the most famous Ma'amar Chazal that it says in the Chumash we just read 2 weeks ago, that the Jewish people stood under the mountain. And everybody knows what that means, to stand under the mountain. Chazal tells B'Shas Shabbos, the Gemara says in Shabbos, Omer Rabbi Avdimi Bar Chama Bar Chasa. Malamit Shekofa HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's a misprint. That's not supposed to be the kuf. That's coffee. Kofa with a kuf means Hashem held the mountain over our heads. Malamit Shekofa HaKadosh Baruch Hu Aleim Esahar Kegigis. That Hashem held the mountain over our heads like a barrel. V'Amar Lahem, and Hashem said, Im Atam Mekavlam Es HaTorah Mutav. If you accept the Torah, good. Vim Lav, and if you don't accept the Torah, Sham Tehei Karoschem, you're going to be buried there. Omer Avacha Bar Yaakov Mikan, Meidor Rabbala Raisa. So we're getting ready for Purim. From here, Rav Acha Bar Yaakov said that the truth is that we had a way out. We had a way out. Since we were coerced, since the Gemara tells us that we didn't really want it, we were forced, and the mountain was held over us, and we were threatened. Halachically, we could have found a way out. So we were anusim. We didn't accept it willingly. So Amarava Af Al Pichain, we did have a time. It's true, there was a time when we could have opted out. But Af Al Pichain Hada Kibluha Bimei Achashverosh. But ultimately, we did accept the Torah out of love in the days of Achashverosh by Purim. All right, that's the famous Gemara. The mountain was held over our heads. We were forced to receive the Torah. Because of that, we really could have excused ourselves and not kept it. But that excuse only would have lasted until the days of Achashverosh. By Purim, it says in the Megillah, Kimu v'kiblu ha-Yehudim. Kimu v'kiblu means we were mekayim. The Torah, the Gemara says, Kimu mashakiblu kvar, that we now accepted it totally out of love and commitment, not just because we were forced. That's the Gemara. V'taisves hikshu. Of course, the obvious question there, the Taisves asks, and this is discussed in many, many svarim. Alright, so that's just the second part of what we're going to do. The first, no, that's, we'll do that in a few minutes. Yeah, hold on to it. The question of Taisvis is, but Taisvis Hikshuai Kvar Yikdimu Naaseh V'Nishma. The question of Taisvis is, why is it necessary for Hashem to hold the mountain over our heads and to threaten us if we said Naaseh V'Nishma? We were very excited. And we said we're prepared to do all the mitzvahs and to keep the Torah unconditionally. So why threaten us? No, why threaten us? Everything is fine. We're getting along great. It seems unnecessary and worse than unnecessary. It's not pleasant at all. As the moshel that I always give is that if the kala under the chuppah, if she is happily getting married, she walks under the chuppah to meet the chasen. She holds her finger out for the ring, and he takes out a gun and says, "Will you marry me?" You know, it could spoil the mood. So, it seems like it definitely spoiled the mood of Har Sinai. We came all excited, and we said, Naaseh V'Nishma, we want the Torah, we're great. We want it, we're prepared to keep it forever. And then Hashem said, well, you know, if you don't, I'm going to kill you. That's what happened. Hashem held the mountain over our heads. He said, I'm going to kill you if you don't take it. Okay, that's one answer, right? That's Tosfos. That's one explanation is that wasn't for the we only accepted the written Torah, right? But then Hashem said, oh, by the way, there's a couple of extra things I didn't tell you about. A couple of extra billion little things that you might want to know. So, you know, the Torah Shemek Sav, the written Torah, that was great. But then all the extra stuff, he said, whoa, we didn't know about that. We didn't expect that. So that's why Hashem, according to that view of Tosfos, that's why Hashem had to hold the mountain over our heads and force us to receive the Torah. But Tosfos has this question. We already said Nasa Benishma. V'nira dihina Yisrael bi'omdom al har Sinai, the Rebbe Rabbunim explains like this, based upon Rabbunim's teaching, this is the Shem Yishmul, Rabbi Shmuel Sochatshavar, using Rabbi Bunim's Torah to explain. V'nira. Dihina Yisrael ba'omdom al har Sinai, hoye berum ha'mayla ma'od. When the Jewish people stood by har Sinai, we were at a most exalted level. We were the highest level we had ever been at. Shaposko zuhamasan, that Chazal say that the original filth of the snake of Gan Eden, the impurity of this world, had been removed from us. We are at the most exalted level. Posko zuhamasan v'hoyu kemaloche elyon. We are like malochim, like angels. V'gidimu nasa l'nishma. And we said nasa before nishma. And the Gemara tells that Hashem, when we said that, Hashem said, "Mi gilul hamraz zeh, lo shemalachi hasharis mishtamshim." But who revealed to my children this formula of nasev and nishma? We'll do, and then we will hear. This is something that only the angels live by. Who revealed this to my children? In other words, we are on the greatest level. Hare shahoyu az merumamim beinyonim keinyan malachim. When we stood at Har Sinai, we were as great as angels. Vim kein muvan. Therefore, it's understood. Shenakel hayolufneihem loof al kanfe meromim. That in their eyes, when a person feels that he's in that state of excitement, of ecstasy, that we were in at Har Sinai, then at that point, with such a feeling and such an emotion, it's not too remarkable to accept the Torah, to accept mitzvahs. Similarly, under the chuppah, so, you know, the chas and kala are in love with each other and everything is great, and they've been this whole time in best behavior, and the two families have tried to hold out and not shown their true colors until now, and it's going pretty good. So at that point, that they have a commitment to each other, it's not such a significant thing. It doesn't mean that much. Since when the emotions are high, the commitment is not one that is made with the clarity of thought, with the acceptance of a situation when it's not particularly good. And things are not, and we not feel that close. This approach to this Gemara is found in the Maharal and the Meshech Chacham as well. It's just, it's fine-tuned over here, based upon this teaching, as you'll see in a minute. So, v'im kein muvan shenokel hayel lefneim lo'uf al kanf merom. It's no wonder that if we were on the level of angels, that we also had wings. And when you have wings, you're prepared to do anything. You're prepared to do anything. You're so excited. Lahashlich mehem. We weren't at all interested in this world. And we weren't, and if somebody would have come to us in Har Sinai and said, would you rather take a nap? No. Would you rather go to a ball game? No. Would you rather watch television? No. It was ridiculous. It would seem more ridiculous to us at that time. And now, you know, from the time that we're kids, they have to pull us out of bed to get the yeshiva, to get the shul. So at that time, when we were flying, so the whole world meant nothing to us. Just like the Chasan Kala. How many, you have the Chasan and Kalas, and when I meet, you know, when they come to talk to me, I want my Chasan, you know, what are you planning on doing? I want it to learn for the, indefinitely. I'd like my Chasan to learn for the next 10 years. And I always ask the girl, do you understand what that might entail? And this is usually a girl that comes from a comfortable, nice little home here in our neighborhood. Do you understand what that entails? Yes. You know, are you prepared to live in a small apartment and to, you know, you might not be able to always get Coca-Cola. You might have to get CNC, God forbid, or something like that. Do you realize that, you know, and changing, you know, outfits, you might not be able to get each yontiv or maybe what you're used to every Monday, Thursday, you know, a new outfit. Are you aware of that? And, absolutely, I'm prepared. Nasev and Ishma. Ochen vei. Don't give it 6 months. 6 months. With the ones that are very, very real and idealistic, goes longer. But the ones that are unbelievable, it can go even longer. But those are very few. By the time you get to the finish line, there's like two or three that are limping in to the finish line. Ruba de Ruba, there's wonderful idealism, which is sweet. But the Nasev and Nishma that this young lady had to her chosen of a life of deprivation, pas b'melach toichal, to eat sparingly and to have a very modest type of a home, that was a promise that was made when the love was very strong, and when everything was going very, very easily and smoothly. And very often, mommy and daddy were paying for her to say those things, meaning that it was okay, because in the meantime, she had what she needed. So the shaila is, what's going to be 5, 6, 7 years from now? It's the same thing with the fellas, except really a lot of the fellas know that they don't sincerely want to do that. The girls believe them. The guys, really, a lot of them know that it's not sincere. But it's a serious problem. Because then, when it's not going so well, it's very hard. So that's what the Rebbe is explaining here. At that point, when they were in love with Hashem, and it was just the beginning of our journey together with Him, they were prepared to throw away everything from this world. This world meant absolutely nothing to them. Just like the Chasna Kala, I don't care, I don't need anything. As long as we have each other, we're fine. The Kisuf and the Alma, all the desires of this world were meaningless. Avur Dover Echem HaTorah, for one word of Torah, the whole world is not worth anything. That's true. That's really the way it's supposed to be, and it can be, and that's the way it was at Har Sinai. Val Kain, HaKabbalah BeHayosah B'matzav Zeh, the commitment that they made of Nasev and Nishma in that situation of being in love, that commitment, that's not going to work for us at a time when the mind is small, when there's constricted awareness, when we don't see thunder and light, and we don't see the lightning, and we don't hear the thunder. In a relationship also, when the thunder and lightning has sort of stopped, and it's just a question of how committed are you. If somebody comes over to Chasan Kala under the chuppah and says, listen, you know, I'd like to introduce you to somebody else after the chasana. Maybe you're interested. You know, are you out of your mind? There's no one else in the whole world. I just wrote it on a card and I said it 1,000 times. There's nobody else in the entire world. The shaila is whether you feel that way 14 years ahead, after you had an argument that morning and you go to work, and there's an interesting-looking new girl in the office. So the shaila is, does that still work? That statement that you made under the chuppah, harei mekudeshesli. That's the question. When you come to a point of kitnas ha-meichen means constricted awareness, when it's not clear to you, and you don't feel much. Va'anoshim pshutim, when you're just a simple Jew at work, you're not standing at Har Sinai, then what? That's the question of your Yiddishkeit. Then the question is, what kind of a Jew are you? V'arav HaKadosh HaRebbe Rabbunim Zatzal Mipshis Chehigit. Listen to what an interesting... This is the Shem Yishmul. And now the Shem Yishmul, that's a Yisod, but the Shem Yishmul explains really Yisod from the Maharal. And now, he connects this to a teaching. He explains this all with a teaching from the Rebbe Rabbunim. V'arav HaKadosh Rabbunim is Higit. Ki Tachlis HaKavana, the purpose and the intent of Hashem is limshoch es pshutei ha'am achar Hashem isbarach, Rabbunim said, to draw the simple Jews to follow after Hashem, to come after Hashem, the simple Jews. In other words, there are certain great people who don't need the mountain over their head. I mean, because they're always in love with Hashem. It's true, those type of people, they don't need that kind of pressure. They'll go to shul and they'll learn on their own because of that motivation that they have within themselves. But the Rebbe Avunim explained that the Torah was not only given for tzaddikim. The Torah was not only given for great people. The Torah was not only given for newlyweds. The Torah was given for every Jew, for the simple Jew as well. And you know, that sounds so obvious to us, but in the non-Hasidic world, in the days of the Rebbe Avunim, that wasn't an obvious thing at all. One of the main reasons why Hasidus was so unbelievably successful was because the vast majority of the Hamon Am, of the population of Jews, the simple Jews, felt totally disenfranchised and had nothing to do with Yiddishkeit. Just, you know, aside from paying the tax to the Kehillah, they did not generally feel that they were part of things. This was, you know, the nature of the hierarchy in the non-Hasidic world or the pre-Hasidic world was very clear. The scholars, the Talmid Chachamim, or the future scholars, were very much respected and esteemed, held in the highest esteem. And the simple Jews really had very little shaychus. The service of Hashem was generally dry, without much feeling. The simple Jews could not understand most of the shiurim. It's not like now, when people have a chance to go to yeshiva for many more years and to go to shiurim. And so the simple people generally, they start to work when they were 11 years old, 12 years old. But they learned elementary Hebrew and Chumash, but they weren't able to go to yeshiva. The girls, b'chlal, now what did the girls have a shaychus at all? The girls were home, and the girls didn't go to school at all. There was no school for the girls. So the vast majority of Klal Yisrael, in Europe certainly, felt detached, felt separate. So the Rebbe Avunim says something here that to us it sounds most obvious, but in the time it was still revolutionary, which is that the Torah was given for Pshuta Yisrael, the Torah was given for simple Jews, not for Talmid Chachamim. V'anshe Hamayla, not only that, now you can see why this is going to cause Misnagdim to get annoyed, this next sentence here. Not only are the simple Jews important in Hashem's eyes, the ones who are not standing on top of HaSinai, but the ones who have to stand under HaSinai, not only are those Jews important, but he says, V'anshe Hamayla, meaning the great scholars, really hem kmo kelim. Hashem is using the scholars as kelim, as utensils, as vessels. Shehem yimshachu es pshutei am, for the purpose of drawing near to Hashem the simple Jews. Could you imagine? In the mind of the typical Talmud Chacham in those days, the simple Jews exist only to serve them. But the Rebbe Avunim is saying just the opposite, that the Talmid Chacham exists to serve the needs of the simple Jews, to bring them back to Hashem, to be makar of them, to inspire them, to be mechazik them. This is completely the opposite of the general way things were seen in those days. That the Anshe Hamayla, the Talmid Chacham, are here to do what? To take care of the simple Jews? That's what he's saying. Shem Yimshuch was Pshuteyam. Al-Kain, therefore, lo Yisraimimu alayhem. Therefore, Rabbi Bunim says that the Talmid Chacham should not hold themselves above the simple Jews. They only exist to help the simple Jews. They exist to help the Jews. So therefore, they shouldn't hold themselves above the people. Yeah, that's a good question, Bianca. And the answer is long and painful. It's one of the effects of Galus. The simple Jews felt so completely downtrodden and without hope. What happened to the Moshe Rabbeinus and the Yeshuas and the Dovin HaMelechs that gave us hope and that were mechazik us in the earlier years? You know, unfortunately, it really deserves a whole discussion, but unfortunately, they developed a split in our people. They developed a split that those who were uneducated, it's not like now, because of the difficulties of Golus and the pressures of earning a parnasa, those who were talented and those who were gifted were cultivated from the beginning, were being cultivated to continue in learning and so on, and that would be the way to achieve status. And the wealthy families were able to take sons-in-law who were scholars. The wealthy family, so the wealthy were marrying together with the scholars, and the scholars with the scholars, and the simple Jews were somehow, were left behind. And because the measure of one's importance in those days was either money or scholarship, since the Jewish people always looked up to scholarship more than anything, and money is not too far behind, so those people who lacked scholarship and who lacked wealth began to fall behind. Not that they were, God forbid, mistreated or despised, chas v'chalila, but they were not of major concern to the scholars. Unfortunately, this is happening, as we know, even now this is happening in many, many yeshivas. The boys who are not gifted, the boys who are not particularly bright, unless they're fortunate to have an exceptional type of a Rebbe, very often those boys will feel like they're second class or third class, and they're not shown the beauty of Yiddishkeit, that davening is beautiful and to be a Baal Chesed and to try to learn what you can, and even if you don't understand the Gemara so well, there are other things that we can learn with you and to be mechazik you, to be an Eilech Yid, and so this problem has persisted to this day.
It would seem to me that I understand the position of the Amon Ha'am. They didn't know. But supposedly, the scholars knew what their position was supposed to be.
You know, there was such poverty that the few positions that were available, when a position opened up to be a Rav in a city, so there were 200, applicants. And then for Beis Din, so there were another three. There were very few yeshivas in those days. Very few yeshivas. People are coming around, you'll meet them, they'll come on a Sunday, he says he's a Reish Karlo, and then if you go see his Karlo, he's got a table in some place, he's got, five guys, that's his Karlo. So he's able to find himself a little niche. And he might be a great scholar. But in those days, what did you have? In Poland, do you know that in Poland they didn't have yeshivas? Do you know that? They didn't even have yeshivas. That's shtiblach. Until Ramesha, the big yeshiva in Lublin, mostly there was shtiblach. You had also Radomsk started some yeshivas, the Pizets, the Neish Kodesh had. But all the years, what did you have in Poland and in Hungary? You didn't have yeshivas. And you had one or two. Pressburg was famous, the Chassam Sofer. Most of them were shtiblach. Ask any Jew from Poland, ask him, where'd you go to yeshiva? Where'd you graduate from? So what kind of yeshiva? There was in town. There was a kloiz. What's the kloiz? And a shtiebel. There was a chatriska kloiz, a bobova kloiz, whatever. They sat in the shtiebel, and there were a couple of chevra, and they milant. And there was usually a talmud chacham at two. That was the roish chabura, and that he would learn with them. And that's how they learned. They didn't have yeshivas. So how were the scholars to make a living? The way to make a living was to be a rov of a city, and even then, was it a living? You had to sell a shrekim also, and a couple, and maybe sometimes even to get the milk. So to make a living, so the scholars were holding on very strongly to those positions, and the simple Jews generally could not afford to send the boys off to those few yeshivas that they should be able to sit and learn for more than a couple of years. They had to have the boys. They had to have the boys working, so the boys were working. They had to survive. So it was perpetuating itself. This whole mahalo.
That's predated Europe. It was an
The difficulties of the times were. It was always true. It's always true. There are indications, however, that during the time of the Nevi'im, that there was a tremendous amount of work that was done with the Hamoinam. That the Nevi'im, that was one of the things that the Nevi'im were doing, was that they were going around and speaking to to the Hamoinam, as we see from the Navi. It wasn't just, they weren't just addressing the leaders of the people and the scholars. But I remember my father told me that he remembers in his city. So the Rov is a huge tzaddik, a huge Talmud Chacham. When he gave the few times, he didn't speak Shabbos, you know, they didn't speak Shabbos, when Shabbos HaGobel, Shabbos Shuvah. And when, you know, when it was Zayin Adar, there were certain times, but when he spoke, my father said that there were maybe, out of the 600-700 people that would be in the big shul for Shabbos Shuvah, Shabbos HaGobel, my father said maybe there were like 6 or 7 that could follow. There were 6 or 7, they sat around, and everybody was just respectful, and they were quiet. He said that A, they couldn't hear him. He was a little old man. And B, even if they would hear him, it was so beyond the reach of the Hamayinam that it wasn't shy. It just wasn't shy. And how did that start? When did that begin? Women bechlal not, with the men bechlal, with the rabbanim bechlal. They were magidim. Oh, the Magidim went around and were talking to everybody. But the problem is they were talking about Gehenna all the time. So the only thing that anybody ever heard is that, you know where you're going after this year. And, you know, after a while, just how much can a person take? There are many, many things that contribute to this, but it's true. It wasn't only in Europe. It was really widespread. That's, if you understand what was going on, and you learn about the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh, and what the Baal Shem Tov in one or two generations, in the generation after Mezuzah Magid and so on, what was accomplished, and you realize how the simple Jews were thirsting, were chalishing for Hashem, and nobody ever tapped into that. Nobody ever recognized that. In the simple Jews, they were just, you know, schleppers, and, you know, they were nobody. And what seems so obvious to us was bechlal not obvious in those days, and that's what makes the whole movement so much more revolutionary. It's really amazing. So he says that because the Anshe Maila, the scholars, they really serve the purposes of the simple Jews. Therefore, they shouldn't take pride. They shouldn't try to hold themselves above the simple people. Vamar hu zalai. And he also said, "Peirush Hakosef, Ula Yesh Chamishim Tzadikim B'Seicha Ir." Now you remember that Avraham Avinu was davening for the people of Sodom, and he said, "Perhaps there are 50 righteous people B'Seicha Ir within the city." So the Rebbe Udim said, "Shakavana She'enem Aspikim Tzadikim Chayv Shei Beis Hamedrash." Listen, how beautiful this is. Avraham Avinu was saying, "Maybe there are 50 tzadikim within the city." Means the only way you could turn a place like Sodom around is if you have 50 tzaddikim who are circulating within the city. Not if they're just sitting by themselves in the Beis Medrash. That's what he says. Ela oisim shem b'soch ha'ir. Are there 50 righteous men b'soch ha'ir within the city? But it doesn't mean sitting by themselves, isolated from the people. But within the city, amongst the people. And the tzaddikim go around the streets of the city, go from place to place. And you hear how the Rebbe Bunim himself, right? We spoke about his life and all those years that he spent on those trips and these, and with all these maskilim and people who were far from Hashem, to go misavim mechutzos lasos mischar v'kinyan. To go to the marketplace, to get involved with the other people, even with business and so on. Heim yu tzadikim. That's the tachlis. How do you take the people? Two things. Number one, that the ones who are tzadikim have to circulate within the city. Number one. Number two, is that are there 50 tzadikim within the city? Means that Hashem is asking that even Jews who are in the marketplace, who are within the city, can become tzaddik. That's how you can tell it's a great city. If even the Jews are in the marketplace, even the hard-working Jews who are not able to sit all day in Beis Medrash, are they also becoming tzaddikim? Are they also becoming great? O because Yisrael l'chol ha'mokim avrum, Hashem said to Avram Avinu, if you could show me that there are 50 tzaddikim, not just sitting in the Bis Medrash, but if you could show me 50 tzaddikim who are with the people, A and B, if you could show me tzaddikim who are developing within the Hamaynam, amongst the simple Jews, who are becoming tzaddikim, because they're being inspired, they're being taught, and they're being encouraged. So then Hashem said to Avram Avinu, then I'll work with you. We could talk. Val Kane. So the Shem Yishmul explains using this teaching from the Rebunim. Yisrael shohoyu oz b'moichen the godless ma'od. When we stood at Har Sinai, we were in a state of unbelievable clarity and exaltedness. Madregas malochim, on the level of angels. So lo his speaker kabbalosim oz aleihem b'mayim anasev anishma. At that time, every Jew was like a Talmud Chacham. Every Jew was a scholar. Every Jew was great. So the fact that we said we will do, that we were committed to the Torah, that commitment is not the one of a Jew who's walking around in the street, either regarding himself or to help another person. So therefore he says, lo espika kabbalosim oz aleihem b'mayim anasev anishma. The fact that they said Nasev Nishma would not suffice, Lizman Hayos Ha'odna B'Meichin the Kittens, for when the person himself would be in a state of constricted awareness, of small-mindedness, of pettiness, of being involved in the marketplace. Shein Libo Mislahit Kolkach, when his heart is not inspired. Achar HaTayr V'Avayda K'muvan, to learn and to serve Hashem. V'yesh Loimah Shemahai Taima, therefore we understand. Shekofa aleim, taima kofa aleim harki gigis. We understand why the mountain was held over their heads. Of our heads. Why? Hainu shenitlu mehem amadregu sumaychen de godless. He says a very deep thing. He says, suddenly, Hashem took away from us all our madregas. Hashem could do that. He could do anything. Hashem took away our heightened awareness of his presence. Just like the Svarim say, the Tzaddikim explained that when Avram Avinu came to the Akedah, so what kind of a test was it for Avram Avinu to sacrifice his son? For a man like that, it's not such a sacrifice. There are going to be Jews in the future who are prepared to sacrifice their children and themselves to be Jews. Why for Avram Avinu was that such a great test? So there's already found in Chazal that Hashem took away from Avram Avinu the madregas of Avram Avinu. Avram Avinu for that moment was just me and you. He was every man. He wasn't Avram Avinu. And he had to work through that problem of his child as a regular person. So the Rebbe Bunim said that at Har Sinai, Hashem took away from us, at that moment, he took away from us all the madregas, all the clarity. To such a degree, he says, Ad shenisharu kfufim b'madrega l'mata v'sach ha-sahar, to such a degree that we were no longer standing on the mountain or by the mountain, but we felt ourselves under the mountain. He's saying a very profound thing. Of course, we believe that Hashem literally held the mountain over our heads. But what the Rebbe Rabbunim is explaining, or what the Shem Yishmul is explaining from his teaching, the Rebbe Rabbunim is that it's not that Hashem had to hold the mountain over our heads. It's just that where a moment before we felt that we were on the top of the mountain, and this is no big deal, there's no problem at all to be Jews. Suddenly we felt overwhelmed by the mountain, meaning we felt Har Sinai being an experience that we can't manage, like many Jews feel. It's just something which is not manageable. We better go away for Pesach, right? It's just not manageable. Can't do it. That's what he says. Hainu shenitlu mehem amadregas amaychen de galus. It was taken from the adchne show kfufim madrega lamata v'sachas ahar, till we were standing under the mountain. Ba'ifen shahar hayakum ay mesach mavdil beinim levein hakovet. And now the mountain was no longer, they were no longer looking down from on top of the mountain. Not that they were actually ever on top of the mountain. Of course, they didn't stand on top of the mountain, but figuratively. But instead now, The mountain was blocking. They couldn't see anything. The mountain was blocking them. Which is how many people feel about the Yiddishkeit. Many people feel about the Yiddishkeit, not only is it not something which causes me to feel inspired and wonderful and great, but the mountain is blocking my entire life. What I really would like to do is to go out with the gang, you know, with a couple of the gang, whether they're going out, you know, sitting in college, a couple of people around the table, and where are you going tonight? Well, we're going to do this, do that. Where are you going? I'm going to a shir. No, going to help make a minyan. For a person who's inspired, that's the greatest privilege. For the one who's not, he feels that he's being crushed by the mountain. The Yiddish guy is crushing him. He just can't take it. He feels like he's overwhelmed by it. So he feels that he's under the mountain. And that the mountain itself is blocking everything that he wants. The mountain is in the way. Not only is the mountain not the source of inspiration, not only is the mountain not the source of his greatness, but the mountain is standing between me and all that I could possibly have in this world. Oh, if I could work 7 days, I would make this much money. And if I could do this, I would have this much fun. Everything has to be... In other words, anytime you want to do something, there's the old mountain on top of you again. You want to have a good time, there's the mountain. Right? Wherever you look, you see the mountain. And for many people, that's a very harsh experience. It's a very difficult experience. So Hashem took away all of our madrigas. He took us away from that exalted level. And we were suddenly people who felt like you and I. That, yeah, we like it, it's nice. But, it's getting in our way. The mountain is getting in our way. There are many, many, many religious Jews who are Orthodox who keep Shabbos. They feel that the mountain's in their way. And if they could only think of a way to get rid of it. But they can't. They don't know what to do. Without, you know, terrible guilt and the kids wondering what's going on, you know, a lot of stuff. But the mountain's in the way. The mantra, Kabbalah Oz Tasbik Lenetzach. But that's how we receive the Torah. We accept it upon ourselves to keep the Torah, even though we were krechtsing and screaming only later on by Purim, when we were living through terrible darkness and concealment, and we still accepted the Torah, would it become something which is permanent? Would it be something which is forever? But how was the Torah given to us? The Shemesh Shmuel says from this Torah that it wasn't given to us as exalted people. Hashem gave the Torah because he wanted simple Jews to get the Torah. That's what the Rebbe Avunim taught. He wants the simple Jews to receive the Torah. That means that Hashem made every Jew simple at that moment. So that till the end of time, there would be a way for simple Jews also to be God-fearing.
So that's
that's part of it, right? That could explain part of it. That's the union of how the Chet Egel fits into the whole story of Matan Torah is, of course, that's a whole big subject, which we've spoken about many times, but it's not for now. But that this helps to explain something of that. So Hashem wanted that it should be Tasbik Lenetzach. Afilu Lizman Hayosam Atachlis Hashiflis. That when we accepted the Torah, that it should be something which would be forever. That our commitment would be no matter how we feel about it, no matter how unpopular Torah is in our hearts, no matter how much more we'd rather do something else. The Torah is not contingent upon how I feel about it. That's the Yesod of the Maharal. The Torah is, and that's, I was talking about that this past Shabbos, just for a minute. I said, Eilam Mishpatim Mishatasim Lifnayim, those who were in Shul remember, I hope that I said, and I say, I also hope that I remember, that the Rebbe Bunim said, that was the Torah from Rebbe Bunim, which I mentioned in this past Shabbos. Eilam Mishpatim Mishatasim Lifnayim, that what? That the laws of the Torah have to be before you. That's what this is all about. The Rebbe Bunim said that a lot of Jews, they keep the Torah in such a way where they feel that it's me, and then there's the Torah. And if the Torah makes me feel good, then I like it. The stuff that I like, I'll tell my kids and I'll do the stuff that I like. The stuff that I don't like, that's behind me. Those are my ancestors, that's not for me. So the Rebbe Bunim said, that's why it says in the Torah, Eilam Mishpatim Mishatosim Lifneim, these are the laws that you shall place before them. What the Rebbe Bunim said, that means teach the Jews, tell the Jews that Torah comes before them. Torah doesn't exist in order to please them and make them feel good. But they exist in order to keep the Torah. Therefore, the Torah is before them. Lefnehem. That's exactly what this Torah is about. That we receive the Torah, the mountain over our heads, because the Torah is something that we have to keep. If you feel like keeping it, that's great. If you feel that you're being crushed and it's in the way of your fun, you still have to keep it. And we still accept it under those circumstances. That's how we accepted it, as simple people. Don't think that we accepted it. You have a taina. Listen, if someone would have asked me, I wouldn't have wanted it, because I wouldn't have accepted it, because I'm just a simple guy. It's not for me. There's too much stuff over here. So Hashem says, no, you accepted it. You accepted it under duress, and then finally by Purim, you accepted it willingly. But that's how I gave you the Torah. I didn't give the Torah to you as a matter of choice. Your job in life, of course, is to learn and to grow, to appreciate more the choice that has been made for you. That's exactly what we do for our children. Right? There's nobody here that will give a child, try any religion you like and see, make up your own mind. It's always amazing to me that, I've mentioned this before, like, if you tell somebody you don't have a television, they always say, how can you not give your child, don't you think your children should have a choice? So I always say, I don't know why, did you give a kid a choice to have a television or not? You brought a television to the house, you didn't give a choice. It's kofalem harkegigis. What do you mean? You forced your kid into such nonsense, such stupidity. So I forced my kid into reading more books or into talking to his parents a little bit. Okay, so I'll meet you when we're 120 to see who's in bigger trouble, me or you, for doing that. You force your kid into television. I force my kid into reading or to just taking a nap is also better than watching the television. So, and then everybody turns around afterwards and cries, Gewalt, I caught my kid watching this. I caught on the internet. What do you think? They've been in training for the last 15 years, 16 years. And you bought them the weapon. You paid for it. That's a cheshbon nefesh. So that's what he says of it. Of course, I added on a little bit to what the Rebbe would have said. I think that over the years, the Olim is beginning to hear more that it's not so crazy, because you see what's going on. We see what's going on. I tell you, at least 4 or 5 times a week. Today, I was on the phone with somebody who I never met, that got the number from somebody who I don't know how you do it, whatever. I don't know how it works with the internet, but got into the kids. The kid had his own code. And I guess he must have stumbled and left it on or open, because I don't know how you get someone else's code. I mean, so, the mother just called me today. I was on the phone with her for over an hour today. She has this nice little yeshiva bacher, that she's bringing up in a nice home. And she turned on and she found out that her son is not just looking at stuff, but has email with the lowest thing. I can't even talk about it. And she was telling me a few things. I get the picture. It was just beyond belief. A 17-year-old, 16-year-old, 17-year-old boy. That he's already met people. Mm-hmm. He's meeting people. He had the times that he's going to, and he's in the email about how we did this last week, and it was great, and so on and so forth. 16, 17-year-old yeshiva boy. A nice family. So, that's where these things are leading to, Navach. It's a certain path that leads to that. So Jews have to accept the Torah even when they're holding by not understanding and not feeling, because that's what Hashem said we should do. Even though when you feel the mountain your way, this is the way that we receive the Torah, and this is the way that we keep the Torah no matter what. Nevertheless, it certainly is wonderful if we could be more excited about it and climb up the mountain. And that's what the purpose of life is, to get out from under the mountain to climb on top. That's what life is about. And we have our life to do it. But it's only with that acceptance of Torah, the way that it was given in Har Sinai. I have to speak someplace, so I'm...